Welcome to the Next Regeneration Podcast by the Osteology Foundation. We feature hot topics and novel perspectives, always with relevance to the dental career and practice. Join our hosts, Anina and Elena, as they speak with new guests from around the world each month and learn more about what's important for the next generation in oral regeneration.
Welcome back to the latest episode of the Next Regeneration Podcast. Today, we are going to talk about the digitalization of oral implantology. Over the years, oral implantology has seen significant advancements and has also changed how we approach patient cases in this field. However, like any progress, digitalization brings its own advantages and challenges. For instance, guided implant placement has its pros and cons. Doesn't it, Elena?
Absolutely, Anina. And as you anticipated, you know, the introduction of implant surgery and guided implant surgery has definitely revolutionized implant dentistry and has increased our chances to control and meticulously plan all the different stages of implant rehabilitations, from planning to implant placement up to the final restoration. And to explore the diverse aspects of guided implantology, we are delighted to have Tali Czakarczyk with us today. And Tali is a highly accomplished clinician and researcher with extensive expertise in periodontology and implant dentistry. And besides being a member of the Osteology Expert Council, she is an international key speaker on digital implantology, bone augmentation, as well as soft tissue management around teeth and implants. Therefore, we could not have a better guest with us to discuss the various aspects of guided implant surgery, including the pitfalls and benefits. So a warm welcome to our podcast, Tali. It's very good to have you here with us today.
Hi, Elena. Hi, Anina. It's really a pleasure to be here with you today, joining your wonderful podcast. Thank you for having me as your guest speaker. I'm absolutely excited to explore with you digitalization in implant dentistry, being one of my favorite topics.
Yes, absolutely. Also from my side, a warm welcome, Tali. You know, I'm always interested in how people become interested in a specific subject. You already mentioned it. And can you maybe share your story about how you became interested in guided implant surgery?
Actually, it was really natural for me to go into this field, since I really like all kinds of gadget and new digital advancement. But it was around 15 years ago that the head of my department suggested that I will be kind of coordinating new digital aspects in my department. Actually, he suggested it to someone else and she didn't want to do it. So I was just right after my postgraduate training, and I took it, and ever since it became history. It became really something that I learned to go deeply into and get to know all the aspects of it. And I'm really happy about it, because I think it's something that should be so basic for all of us these days.
Yeah, we are also very happy.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Sometimes things just happen, isn't it? You don't really plan them in advance.
Absolutely. You just need to go with the flow.
Exactly. And Tali, I'm also curious, because, you know, sometimes when we talk about digitalization, there is this kind of wrong idea then, you know, everything is done by the computer and you can kind of switch off the brain, but obviously it's exactly the opposite. And the human expertise is very crucial also when you do everything that is has to do with digital. And you know, understanding the potential pitfalls, I think, is very important, especially for young clinicians, or anyway clinicians that are now approaching for the first time all these aspects related to digitalization. So could you maybe elaborate on what you think can go wrong in the various scenarios and the appropriate steps that we should take in those situations where things go wrong and we really need to use our human expertise?
Yes, that's a very good question, because one thing we need to understand about any kind of digital tool that we are using is that the digital tools should not replace our knowledge or our abilities. It should optimize our abilities and should enhance our abilities. And this is a very common mistake that we face whenever we are facing any kind of new digital tool. The whatever it is, the companies will sell it as a replacement for knowledge or for skills. And then right after, people will be afraid that they are going to be disposable and they don't need them anymore. Especially now we see it also in AI. But actually, this is not the situation, because whenever we face this approach that it should replace our knowledge, we have it blown up in our faces. And the same goes for guided surgery, and let's say computer supported implant planning and guided surgery, which is a bigger topic. Actually, when I got into the field 15 years ago, even more than 15 years ago, it's the companies were selling that as a replacement for knowledge. Once you don't have enough surgical skills, don't worry about it. We will just create a guide for you, and then you will just continue drilling through the guide, and all your problems will be solved. And then the catastrophes were constantly appearing. So not only the companies took a step back, but also many societies. For example, the EAO in 2012, they published in their one of the work groups that not only that guided surgery is not for beginners, you actually need extra skills in order to use this. So actually, you should have a basic knowledge of implant surgery, how to perform a surgery, and only then start to implement these tools as an advanced tools, because you should be able to control the tool. And once you are not able to control the tool, then you start to have a lot of problems and a lot of mismatches, which actually can end up in a catastrophe. For example, if you look at just one remark, if you look at publications, you see that sometimes when we use in papers, when you use guided surgery, you see that in the entry point, you have a deviation of 4.5 millimeters from the entry point. It means that actually we are drilling outside of the patient's mouth. How can that be? And this is exactly the situation where we are not controlling the tool, and then we have these kind of problems.
I think this is extremely relevant what you're saying. It's a very important message that we should give to everyone listening, that, you know, as you correctly says, you cannot switch off the brain, but actually it's the opposite, and you need certain skills to approach this type of tool. So I think this is very important to highlight. Thank you for that, Tali.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me also remark that,
yes, please,
you should use guided surgery in places that you are able to do the surgery freehand. Mm. Because if you cannot control the surgery freehand, then you cannot use the tool. I'm sure that any one of you that had experience even once with the guided surgery know that things can go wrong, and sometimes you just need to take the guide and put it aside, especially at the beginning when you are not really controlling the workflow. So imagine the situation that you have a guide, you decide not to use it, and then you don't know how to continue with surgery. So you should use this tool only in cases where you control the situation also freehand.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Right. I mean, you were saying it that, I mean, the guide is an aid and not really a replacement. And certainly switch off the brain is not a good idea at all. So thank you for that, to mention that again. And, Tali, so you were mentioning the challenges and, also what can go wrong in that sense. And, you know, one thing you said at the beginning is that we have sometimes this mismatch between digital planning and the real patient condition. Let's say, for example, the drill or the guide is not fitting well. So let's backtrack a bit and focus on the initial planning phase. Could you provide an overview of the crucial steps where we need to be careful and maybe also pay attention that we don't get to this situation with the mismatch?
Yes. Another very important aspect to consider when we are using any digital tool is that we plan on the software, on a digital world, and then we need to transform somehow this information to the patient's mouth. These leaps between the physical world, the patient, into the software, the digital world, and then back again to the surgical field. These leaps require coordination, require a calibration. So we will know that we are shifting in the same coordinates from one arena to the other. This is true for any digital tool that we use, whether it's a smile design or guided surgery or any other thing. Now, when we start with the guided surgery, the most important part that it shouldn't be skipped is to create a proper digital file for our patient. Of course, the first step that we need is to have the CT scan of the patient, the DICOM file that we upload on the software. But it's not enough just to have this. We need to have three pieces of information. One should be the DICOM, the CT scan. Then on top of that, we superimpose a model of the patient, which is taken either conventionally and then scanned in a table scanner or taken with an intraoral scanner. And this step is extremely crucial to be accurate, because in all companies, we are creating the guide according to this model. And this model should be taken the same way as we do it for final restoration, extremely meticulous. This is one of the key points for accuracy later on when we go back to the patient's mouth. And the third piece of information that we need is actually the WACSAP, our destination, where we want to go. This, unfortunately, is a step that is very often being skipped by a clinician because they don't understand the importance of it. Now, remember that we said that the digital tools should enhance our capabilities. And one of the most important parameters for implant placement is actually the implant angle, because this will influence the prosthetic superstructure. We have to have a certain angulation of the implant in order to have a proper or easy or long-lasting prosthetic framework. So the WACSAP, our destination, is extremely crucial also for us to know how to optimize the treatment plan. And then we just have a digital file for a full simulation of the case from beginning to end. We can have all the information that we have to understand the anatomical limitation of the case as well as the prosthetic requirements. And now we can negotiate between the people on the team or even with ourselves what would be the best treatment option, and then to shift it into a guide. But I think this planning part is the most important part to be done, to be recorded, I mean, to have the data recorded correctly, but also to finalize the treatment plan properly, and then afterward, execution will be much easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Absolutely, because I like, because I think it's very important to think the case through until the prosthetic part. I mean, as a prosthodontist, I see that. I think it's very important. Yes.
We are no longer in the days that
exactly.
We were just putting the implants wherever, and now let's the pros guys break their head how to deal with it.
Yes.
Now it's not enough just to put the implant in the bone. We want to have a perfect inclination, because it's extremely established now that we want to have a screw retained restoration. We want to have the implants in the long axis of the crowns. We know that these things will also have influence on longevity. And I must say, it also have an influence on the cost of the patient, because if the implants are positioned properly in terms of angulation, also the interparts are going to be cheaper. The lab work is going to be much more simple. The prosthetic work will be much more simple. So actually saying that guided surgery has even a bigger prosthetic advantages than surgical advantages.
True. But Ali, we can even go, you know, a step further, because until now we have focused on static guided implant placement, but we know that in recent years, dynamic implant placement has also gained increasing attention. So could you maybe shed light on what this entails and pinpoint the distinctive features that differentiate between dynamic implant placement and static implant placement?
Oh, good. Thank you for this question. Because
very complex.
Yeah, very.
No, not
day.
At all.
But very new.
It's an opportunity to highlight something about dynamic navigation. Actually, again, going back a little bit to the history and evolution of these tools, dynamic navigation and static navigation were evolving at the same time. It's not that dynamic is evolution of a static, but they were developing at the same time simultaneously. And actually the dynamic navigation was not, didn't catch. Why it didn't catch? Because it has a lot of limitations, and still the dynamic navigation is kind of a backwards technology. And let me explain. When we say static navigation, it means that we are creating a virtual plan of implant position. According to that, we are creating a virtual tool to be either printed or milled to a physical instrument, a guide that we are going to use during surgery. This is called static because the guide is static. And opposing this, we have a dynamic navigation. It means that we are going to see on the screen of the computer the position of the drill inside the bone in real time. That's why it's dynamic, because we see the drill in real time in a dynamic manner on the screen of the computer. However, and this is a big however, the CT image of the patient is not dynamic. The CT image is taken in advance, and now we need to superimpose the position of the drill on the outline of the bone while drilling. Again, we go back to the important part of calibration. If we are not calibrated properly, then we see the drill in a certain place on the bone, on the image on the computer, but actually we're in a different position in the mouth of the patient. And this technology that we have today is again a little bit old-fashioned technology. It's very similar to what we had in Wii games. We have a camera on top of the patient, and the camera sees a barcode, a QR code that we have on the handpiece, and it's calibrated by direct vision. So it means that every step after every drill, we need to calibrate the machine. And if we have, if we are hiding the line of vision between the camera and the handpiece, For example, if we are right-handed and we work on the left side, we need to lean to the left. So we might, the camera might miss the barcode, and we have this connection in communication. So we either have a lag in what we see on the screen, or that we are going to be totally messing the calibration. Therefore, it's a still extremely expensive tool for, with a lot of limitations and a lot of fallbacks. That is the reason why it didn't really become something everyday for everyday use.
Routine, yeah.
And many people that bought these big machines just have them as white elephant in their clinic because it's specifically for specific indication. You cannot do fully dentureless cases, or it's very complicated. You cannot do lower jaw is extremely complicated. You cannot do the left side if you're right-handed because you have a lot of hiding. So of course there are some clinicians that control it, but it's not a common use. So I would say it's a nice, very appealing technology, but it's not there yet.
So I guess,
I mean, it wasn't there to begin with. We are going, we are evolving in a different direction, not in this direction.
So I guess you have somewhere this big white elephant in your private practice. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes, but you're absolutely right, because it's much more difficult. And another thing I want to say in this regards, many people that support this technology, they say that you can change your drilling while drilling. I mean, if you find something new or you want to change your treatment plan ongoing, then you can use it while you are with dynamic navigation, something that you cannot do with static navigation, because with static navigation, what you have is what you are going to drill through, and actually you are drilling kind of blindly. And with dynamic, you can change the inclination, or you can change the position of the drill while drilling. But for this also, we need to be very critical when we hear things. And this is also not an advantage at all. It means that your planning wasn't proper, because if you create a proper digital file and you plan your case perfectly, why would you need to change while drilling? Anytime you go back to the patient mouth, you just have the reality will confuse you, because the patient is leaning and the angulation is different. Or if you are going to change while drilling, you're just going to be more confused. Everything that you have in a very comfortable manner on your screen is everything that the patient has. Nothing will change while drilling unless your planning wasn't correct. So whenever you hear this as an advantage of dynamic drilling, you need to keep in mind that this is not an advantage at all.
Good to know. So, Tali,
sorry for being so critical about this, but I think we need to be to look at technology with open eyes, to understand the limitations and the advantages, and to use it according to the situation that we want.
So, Tali, then I have a following question. What is the best case to start with? I mean, besides dynamic implant placement, let's stick with the static.
Yes. This is also a very important question, because I give a lot of courses for guided surgery, and many people say, well, I do quite well freehand, and I will keep this to my most complex case. And usually they start with the most complex case, usually a fully dentureless case, which is complex from so many aspects. But I think that once you start with a tool, you need first of all to learn the tool. You need to control the tool. You need to understand the workflow. So as I said previously, first of all, you need to have certain basic knowledge of implant surgery. Let's say that if you look at consensus reports, it's not enough to have basic. You need to be experienced with implantology and only then start to implement guided surgery. Now, the first thing I would suggest is while gaining this experience with the implant surgery, start using the software. Start using the software of guided surgery as a viewer to learn your case, because you see the case in different aspects, in three dimension together with the sagittal cuts. You learn your case, you simulate your case before you practice it. And only then you start implementing it also through a guide. And for that, I would start with a very, very simple case. Like, let's say a premolar with tons of bone between two teeth. So you would say, why would I need a guide for that? I would use it as kind of a tuition, just to learn how to control the workflow. What should I expect through the workflow? And only then, once you control the workflow and you know to handle things, if things go wrong, either with planning or with the software, and you check yourself and you see how did it go, only then gradually continue to two missing teeth between teeth, and then just a posterior area with teeth on the front. That's the guide is supported partly by teeth, and then posterior area with the tissue. And only once you control the tool totally, only then continue to fully dentureless cases, because fully dentureless cases is a different story in terms of calibration, and it requires a lot of surgical skills as well as prosthetic preparation, meticulous prosthetic preparation. Right. So I hope.
You answer. Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, you know, for every tool, there is a learning curve. So it's good absolutely. To start from an easy case. But I was also thinking, you know, beside the clinical scenario, are there any other particular challenges or barriers that may prevent us from applying guided surgery in everyday practice? Like, I don't know, for instance, I'm thinking about the cost, which we should not forget, the extra cost that guided surgery may entail, or maybe, I don't know, the need for a specific lab that you need to use. So which other challenges do you see in relation to this type of procedures?
Let's say that, especially today in 2023, almost 24, we look at our work in high definition, and we expect it not only to be successful, but also to be long lasting. And I think this tool should be a gold standard. But of course, so actually, when you ask me, is there a case that I would not use guided surgery? I would say there isn't such a case. But of course, we have the limitation. First of all, we need to gain some experience with the implant surgery. And then we have also the matter of costs. But it should be considered together with the complexity of the case, because even in an aesthetic area for one tooth, I would use a guide regardless of the cost, because these areas are extremely challenging. Whereas some cases of, let's say, three posterior area implants, where I, which is not so much so challenging in a surgical manner, but still, if I divide the cost of the guide to three implants, it's not so expensive, then I would do a guide anyway, because I would like the perfect implant angulation for the later on prosthetic work. So actually, I don't see any contraindication in terms of cost. And regarding the workflow, I would say that actually we do the same workflow and we use the same labs and the same technique, only in a different order. Because let's say in a conventional manner without using the guide, first of all, we have our planning, then implant installation, then we come to the prosthetic work. So we create a wax up, and according to that, we create the prosthetic restoration. But with guided surgery, we just shift this last part and we do it before implant installation in order to take advantage of the prosthetic consideration or the prosthetic requirements to optimize implant position. So I admit that I'm biased, but I would say that I think it should be a gold standard for any of our cases. For sure, it took me several years to gain confidence with this tool and to say what I say today, because I had to understand that I can count on this tool to give me the end result that I expect, and to learn what are the borders or what are the deviation that I should expect, because anything that we do cannot be 100% perfect. But once we see and we control the tool, then I think it's very tempting to use it. And now I use it even more and more.
Yeah, it's really tempting. I mean, it lets you also better sleep, I guess, because you always know that you have, I mean, yes, I know, no replacement, but it will help. So yes. Going from the gold standard in 23, and let's look into the future. And nowadays you can see these augmented reality glasses everywhere. And this involves somehow the projecting digital information in front of your eyes. And that's something very new. And I'm sure we will see that more and more. Tali, have you had the chance to explore this technology?
Oh, yes, yes. let's say 6 or 7 years now, I'm trying to play with all of these augmented reality tools. Also had the opportunity to give a TEDx talk about augmented reality in implant surgery, but this is really exciting. And if we were discussing first the dynamic navigation to be, let's say that I think the static is an evolution of the dynamic navigation, not vice versa. I think the future lies within augmented reality, or let's say mixed reality. But let's do also some order in this. We have today several options of augmented reality. The first application that we see for augmented reality is a projection of what we see instead of the screen of the computer somewhere in the physical world. For example, it's very common in intraoral scanners. Some of the intraoral scanners have augmented reality glasses together with them. So instead of looking backwards at the screen of the computer, you can look at the patient's mouth while scanning, and then you will have the projection very like in the horizon. It's just projects whatever you scan instead of, so you see your screen of the computer projected on the area of work. And the second application that we have today for augmented reality is more for teaching. And I had the opportunity also to play a little bit with the HoloLens and the Google goggles that have augmented reality, which I can wear it and I look at the patient's mouth and I can do, let's say, a surgery, and it will project to a distant participants that they can either, they will see exactly what I see, and they can also give remarks or take be part of the surgery. But this is not really augmented reality. It's more for teaching and tutoring. And the third application, which is the most exciting for augmented reality, is actually mixed reality. Instead of having these images on the screen and we are projecting the screen in front of us, we are projecting, let's say, layers on our physical world. For example, if we speak about guided surgery, we will look at the patient's mouth and we will see the wax up on the patient's mouth. And we will have a virtual stylus that is projected on the patient's mouth, and we will be able to shift our drill according to this stylus, because this stylus is calibrated to where we want our implant to be. Now, this technology is actually a leap forward than what we already have, because it's instead of being restrained to the screen of the computer, this is what augmented reality and mixed reality is about. We are taking the digital information, projecting it on our physical world, and we don't need this shift between the screen of the computer and the physical world. Mm-hmm. These tools are available, but they are not yet fully implemented in dentistry. It is fully implemented and working in spine surgery, in eye surgery, in our call, because it's still extremely expensive. But as we know, once we already have the technology, it's just a matter of time until it will become more accessible also in the field of dentistry. So I would encourage every one of you listening to us to start and get on the train of digitalization with static guide, with dynamic guide, because we are going there, and the future is really exciting in these terms.
Thank you, Talia. I mean, this was very, very interesting, and I can see the passion, you know, coming out from your words. So it's really inspiring. And I hope everyone listening to the podcast will be inspired to use these tools and to be more digitalized, let's say, in the future. So unfortunately, you know, our time is up, but maybe we can just very, very quickly summarize what we have discussed. So if you have any very short, I don't know, take-home messages that you want to give us, to us and to our listeners, that would be very helpful.
Yes. First of all, you're absolutely right about the passion thing. But yes, I think, first of all, I would like to emphasize that the digital tools that we have today in implant surgery, I think that the most powerful impact that they have today is on case diagnosis. And for that, you don't need experience. You can jump on the train right now. It's an amazing tool to simulate your case, to optimize treatment planning, and to simulate everything from beginning to end, even before you touch the patient. So I encourage you, first of all, to use these digital tools for case planning. Second, we should keep in mind that digital tools should optimize our capabilities. They don't create capabilities. So first, we need to have the surgical skills, and only then we are optimizing it using advanced digital tools. I always say that a fool with a tool is still a fool. So we need to be, first of all, gaining the knowledge and then to control it. And the third take-home message relates to the workflow. In order to control and optimize the implant placement when we are using a guide, we always need to think about calibration. We always need to think that the digital information that is colorful and therefore deceiving is not a reality. We need to make sure that we transform from the screen of the computer in a reliable way to the physical world. And while keeping this workflow very meticulous and not skipping any step, we can make sure that we are going to have a predictable result.
Dear Dali, you explained it so nicely. Everything about the digitalization in oral implantology, and I really liked to listen to you. And I think you also highlighted all the important aspects of it. So thank you very much that you were here, our guest in our episode. And yes, I'm very looking forward.
Thank you very much for hosting me. And thank you very much for having this important series of podcasts. I enjoy very much to listen to it, and I'm sure that the next chapters are going to be as fun and exciting, and hopefully to see you again soon. So thank you very much.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Next Regeneration Podcast by the Osteology Foundation. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode. We'll be right back.